Hi, welcome to a Standard podcast. My name is Kevin Lings and I'm the Chief Economist within Standard. Today I'm joined by Amit Palmer, who is an investment specialist within JP Morgan Asset Management, and we are going to be talking about global equities with a specific focus on Standard Global Select Fund. And I guess what we want to delve into in terms of this podcast is understanding how various stocks make their way into the Global Select Fund. What is that process of populating the fund with various equities? We understand, obviously, that the investment process is fairly involved. There are lots of individuals that undertake research within JP Morgan, but I guess it would be useful to delve into what has to go into that information that is provided for each particular stock and what is the sort of qualifying criteria for that stock to be included in the portfolio. So, Amit, can we just start off with a general description of the investment process, the research process, and what starts to inform the stock selection?
Absolutely, Kevin, and thank you so much for having me again on here. It's great to be speaking with you. So, as you mentioned, at the heart of it really is the insights of more than 80 analysts located around the world. And this is a fundamental bottom-up stock picking process where the stock selection and those company-level insights from the analysts really is the special sauce that powers those investment returns. And really, if I was to categorize what our analysts are looking for, fundamentally, it's great business quality and sustainable earnings from a franchise perspective, and then a long-term valuation framework, which really supports looking at long-term drivers behind companies. So we forecast those earnings out going beyond 5 years. We call it the five-year expected return framework. And just to break that down, this same process is utilized across all of the companies within the universe. So there's an analyst in Japan who covers autos. There's an analyst in the US who covers autos. There's an analyst in Europe who covers autos. And likewise with every other sector. And all of them are using that same one common investment language, which makes it very easy for a global portfolio manager to then pick stocks from that, from those outputs or from those research outputs. And just digging into that company quality that we utilize, we have our own, what we call the strategic classification framework. So this is very qualitative in nature, and it's an assessment of that business quality, how competitive that business is, the pricing power of that business, do we trust management with capital, and how long those returns we believe will be sustained. And then on the other side of it, it's that valuation framework. What's the price we're willing to pay for that business quality overall? When you piece both of those together, that's what informs the portfolio construction behind the Global Select equity portfolio.
So, Amit, there must be a lot of stocks that are in the universe, right? We're talking thousands of potential equity that need to be evaluated, that need to be researched. Can you talk to us about what is the initial filtering process? How do you try and break down those thousands of choices into a sort of short list of potential investment options?
Yeah, and again, it comes back down to that process. And the first steps in terms of filtering really are those assessments of quality and the valuation. And on the quality side, we divide that universe up into four categories or four classifications: premium, quality, standard, and then challenged. And ideally, what we would be looking for from an opportunity set perspective is those premium and quality names. So the portfolio, relative to the universe, relative to the benchmark, tends to be overweight those premium and quality names. And very simply put, think of those as your A and B grade students from a business quality perspective. So great quality franchises such as, say, an Amazon, a Microsoft, these or a Taiwan Semiconductors manufacturing company, TSMC, these are some of those names which really do screen very well in terms of that qualitative assessment. And they're some of the biggest positions in the portfolio. And then the other leg of it then, as mentioned before, is, well, what's the price you're willing to pay for that quality overall? And here we're not just looking at valuation in terms of relative just within a region, for example. It will be relative to a peer group globally across that analyst base. So you can then arrive at that stock selection it when assessing, say, a Michelin against a Bridgestone or an Eli Lilly against a Novo Nordisk. You're comparing like for like on a global basis. And that filtering process really comes down to, on a valuation basis, what's looking most attractive? And we divide that up into quintiles. So quintiles one and two being the most attractively valued names. And then also from a business quality perspective, what is the price we're willing to pay for that franchise strength and that quality there overall? And do we believe that that will sustain over the course of, say, a 5-year time period? And the names that screen the best from those analyst inputs tend to be that core opportunity set that we're building the portfolio around. And then positions are sized around portfolio manager conviction in terms of where we feel we have the most insight and conviction and valuation opportunity and upside to arrive at that portfolio construction where we're sizing our positions.
And then, Amit, how important are sectors? So, is there an overlay that says we would like to have a bigger exposure, say, to the motor industry because of some dynamic that is unfolding around motor vehicle sales, or equally for semiconductors or for the oil sector? How important is the sector in informing which particular stocks you start to look at?
So the sector composition, and if we take a step back to start with, we divide our analysts up not by GIC sectors, that traditional 9 or 10 sector scheme that lots of asset managers are using. We've divided our analysts up into a more granular way. So we at JP Morgan, we think about our sector classification using a proprietary scheme of 19 sectors. And that's how our analysts are really divided up, and we group them up into those 19 sectors. So we believe that, say, the semiconductor sector behaves very differently to other parts of information technology, where you've got, say, hardware companies in there, you've got software companies in there, you've got the media sector wrapped up into that. We tend to be a bit more granular there, so we break that out more. The second point there is what tends to happen is the valuation signal we get from our bottom-up process from our analysts overall is what informs those overweights and underweights at the overall sector level. Now, if you look at the overall portfolio, we do so in a very risk-constrained manner. So the maximum overweight in the portfolio at a sector level is no more than 3%. The maximum underweight is no more than 3%. And that might seem like, oh, you're very similar to the benchmark, but we take that active risk within each sector. And that's what's really informs that risk-taking within the strategy overall. So our belief is we want returns to be driven from stock selection, but we want that stock selection to be within that sector constraint that we've imposed on this portfolio. And this is a very core portfolio by nature. And our special source, our insight, is really stock selection within that sector level overall, amongst those 19 sectors.
So, Amit, can you give us a sense of what is making their way into the portfolio at the moment? Where would the focus be in terms of specific sector overweights or specific equity overweights that you have positioned yourself for in terms of going into the second quarter of the year?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think two to discuss and two to highlight, which performs particularly well over the first quarter, where stock selection really drove those returns, were in, and naturally it was a key topic of conversation when I visited South Africa a couple of months ago, was in the technology, semi and hardware sector, and also in the media sector. We've been overweight both of those sectors, but what's really crucial here is actually some of the overweights and underweights within that. So, and I'll take three examples here. So we've been underweight Apple overall for this period. We've actually started to build that position up now a little bit more. But being underweight Apple actually helped our portfolio returns over the course of this period. They were obviously impacted by slightly disappointing earnings speculation over slowing iPhone sales, and the stock actually came down on the back of some of these concerns, and being underweight proved helpful for performance. Conversely, on the other side of that, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing, TSMC. We think about that rally last year, that AI exuberance, which really fueled markets. TSMC didn't participate to the same extent as some of the other names, but really performed very well in the first quarter of this year, being up by more than 30%. And this is very, very important for us. So TSMC isn't a name in the MSCI World benchmark we use for the Global Select strategy. So that performance there has really come through very, very strongly. And then the final name that I would actually highlight and flag for you, of course, NVIDIA. So we've been building that position up over a period of time. It's performed very, very well over the course of the first 3 months of the year. We continue to see that valuation upside in the opportunity, and we believe that it's very, very difficult to replicate what NVIDIA do. They have that pricing power within their specific sector of making chips, but more importantly, the stack for those chips, particularly for AI. And that just gives a flavor in terms of where we've found some of those opportunities. Of course, as those names have performed well, we've been trimming back on some of them. As Apple actually performed less well, we've built that position up a bit more on valuation discipline there. So we're always thinking about where to take profits and reallocate them elsewhere. But the example I wanted to share with you, of course, was the most topical today.
And then just lastly, and I'm conscious of time, but is there a is are you finding it easy to get equities that meet your criteria, or is it fairly challenging? And I'm asking that in terms of that specifically in terms of valuations. So sometimes it might be that your portfolio, you having to select from many options and you are overwhelmed with choice, and you find that you've got to exclude some very good equities from the portfolio. And then at other times, the opposite might be true. How would you characterize the environment at the moment? Are equities that meet your criteria in good supply?
So the first way I would address this is with our 80 analysts located around the world, divided by sector, divided by region, there's always going to be a bench strength of ideas coming from somewhere in the world. And then from that, when we think about the valuation signal from our analysts, so neutralize at the sector level, take out of account regional differences and sector differences, the valuation signal, the difference between what we screen as the cheapest and the most expensive stocks in the universe, it's not quite at all-time highs, but it's pretty close. And that makes sense intuitively when we think about how concentrated and how narrow the cohort of companies which has driven the rally is, and how overlooked certain other pockets of the market are, and how increasingly you're seeing headlines saying how cheap and on a valuation basis European equities are. You're seeing compelling cases for opportunities outside of that Magnificent Seven cohorts increasingly, and attention turning towards those, and that rally actually fanning out a little bit more. So on a valuation basis, both from the breadth of research platform we have, but also from a valuation argument, there's plenty of opportunity out there, and we're very excited about that going into 2024.
Brilliant. Thanks for your insights, Amit. We really appreciate that. And from my perspective, the fund has done exceptionally well, and I'm sure it will continue on that in the future. Thanks for your time.